Chapter 1. Marjorie Paston. The Paston House in Norwich, autumn 1467. I was given the task of helping him to collect up the documents appertaining to rents owed to us in Norwich. My mother was short of money, and our tenants, as ever, slow to pay, and so must be chivied with a visit. He took them from the coffer where they were stored, passing them to me. I looked at the street named on every document and placed them in order of distance from our Norwich house. He handed me another. Our hands touched, his fingers just brushing mine. Not deliberately, for he had too much honour for that, and knew that it would not be appropriate for him to make so intimate a gesture. Yet with that briefest of contacts he turned his head, and we regarded each other. The sorting of documents was abandoned. How often had our hands touched in such a manner? How often had our eyes met in concern or laughter or merely acknowledging our existence before sliding away? That morning it was different. Slowly he stood, taking the document from me, taking care not to touch me again. He was taller than I, with a shock of fair hair that had fallen over his forehead. There was dust on his hands and the cuffs of his well-worn houppelande, fit for nothing but a morning's hard work amongst the Paston documents. But he was dressed with his customary neatness in well-cut russet wool, as befitted a man of professional rank. I studied his face with deliberate courage, refusing to allow my gaze to fall away in case it expressed too clearly the thoughts that raced through my mind. What did I see? The fair skin, pale brows, straight lips that rarely smiled. His eyes were clear and grey, always alert and assessing. This was Master Richard Call, bailiff to the Paston family, the most highly trusted man in our household.
"I think the task is complete, Mistress Marjorie. My thanks for your help," he said,
his voice cool and calm as always, even when under duress from a recalcitrant tenant.
"I will arrange a visit to those in arrears, if you would be pleased to inform your mother that all is in hand."
"But today I did not wish to speak of rents and business." "What do you think of me, Master Call?" I asked. I thought that he sighed, just a mere exhalation of breath. I had never been so forward, so provocative, but now I was almost 20 years of age and had acquired a Paston mind of my own. It was difficult not to. Living in close proximity to my mother and grandmother, both women with a will as strong as the iron lock on the abandoned coffer. Master Call did me the honour of not pretending to misunderstand my question, or being shocked by it.
"I cannot say, Mistress Marjorie."
"Why can you not say?" He placed the document carefully on the table with the rest, turning away from me. Yet he answered,
"I must not say. It would be highly ill-advised for me to speak what is in my mind."
"That is no more of an answer," I replied, concentrating on the skill of his hands as he deftly re-rolled a number of documents. They were long-fingered, broad-palmed, and I wished that I might feel the touch of them again. Would he never take my hands in his, as a lover might do with his beloved?
"Because what I might think of you must not be, Mistress Marjorie, as I must not ask what you think of me."
A single line developed between his brows.
"It is wrong of you to ask me."
I allowed an awkward silence to develop after this statement, waiting to see if he would break it. When he did not, I ventured a mild reply. "We have known each other a long time, Master Call."
"I am aware."
"For many years. Since I was a child."
"Yes."
"Do we not know each other well?"
"Yes, as well as any member of your family knows its bailiff."
Ah, but there was the crux of the matter. I continued my pursuit of him. "I think that I may say that we do not dislike each other."
"We may say that."